Is there anyone here for the first time tonight? Thank you. Welcome.
He's born again.
Yes, he is. Well, maybe I'll start off with a little announcement that this Saturday is a Sangha day, a day that the community gets together and does a few cleanup and repair projects around here. A person might come the whole day, 9:15 to 4, and bring sort of potluck lunch to share, or a person could come for just a short while. And it's a nice way to be in the community and meet people and to help out keeping the temple in good repair. Dogen, our first ancestor in Japan in the early 1200s, he had a Sangha day at his monastery where they were doing some kind of building project. The community from town that sat there, as well as the monks that lived there, and he gave two talks that have now become number 69 and 70 in his large work, Shobogenzo. The two talks it was thought he gave the first talk kind of during a break during the work, and the second talk was in the evening when everyone went home, had their supper, got a little dressed up, came back to the monastery. The monks got out of their work clothes and bathed a little bit and put on their robes. And the second talk was supposedly a little more formal. And they're both, the first ones that he gave is titled Awakening the Supreme Mind. And the second one is Awakening Bodhi Mind, the mind of Buddha, the awake mind. And according to the footnotes, in both fascicles, that term awakening Bodhi mind was used. That first one, supreme mind, was maybe even picked by somebody else just to differentiate the two different lectures. But they're both about how we awaken our enlightened mind, the mind of Buddha, in this very body and mind. Dogen really wanted everyone to know that their work project was a manifestation of unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. He wanted everyone to know that our awakened mind isn't something that we achieve just in this straight-backed, cross-legged posture that we're all in. But this awakened mind was right with them as they gardened in the backyard, as they built the new Dokusan room, as they painted the trim on the Zendo. That all of that was unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. Not a special mind state, but just focused work. The conditions for awakening the mind for enlightenment are not a matter of bringing forth a mind from elsewhere, but of awakening the mind by bringing forth just the mind of enlightenment. So this isn't something special that you have to study for. Bringing it out of some place that you didn't know, that now that you've studied hard, now you have this mind of enlightenment. The conditions for this awakened mind are just awakened mind, the truth that is all around us all the time, are the conditions for awakened mind. Bringing forth the mind of enlightenment is picking up a blade of grass and making a Buddha, picking up a rootless tree and making a scripture. That line is about really caring for ordinary things, really making the most out of even the most ordinary object. That's the picking the blade of grass and making a Buddha. Is that how we said it? Picking a blade of grass and making a Buddha. So really carefully, with a lot of compassion, using our ordinary glasses, picking up our ordinary teacups. Catherine, our former abbot who died the summer before last, had a practice of, before she entered through a door, she would just bow to the doorknob, giving it a little bit of extra attention, this simple mechanical thing that we grab a hold of many times a day. She just paid a little attention to the to this ordinary thing that was so handy, that allowed us to open the door and go someplace, go through it, allowed us to keep the door shut, to keep the cold out. That's the practice of just a bit blade of grass making a Buddha. I noticed one of the Doans the other day when they were lighting the altar for service. They have to light three candles, and they tried, and they did it. They just used one match to light all three of those candles. We have a whole cupboard full of matches. Matches are pretty cheap, but somebody goes to work every day and puts together matchbooks. Even though they're pretty ordinary, it's nice to pay attention to them and use them as efficiently as possible. So, I was watching as that match got shorter and shorter as he went around the altar trying to get them all before he burned his fingers. But that too is blade of grass making a Buddha. And that's the mind of Buddha. That's unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. The conditions of awakening, he goes on, is presenting Buddha with a cup of sand, is presenting Buddha with a bowl of soup. It's giving food to living beings. It's presenting flowers to the Buddha. So we hear it. Santa Cruz Zen Center, now in our seventh year of making lunch for the Homeless Garden Project and the River Street Shelter. I think, you know, those of us, it's been a big group over the 7 years. I think those of us who've been doing it, you know, keep coming back because we know that that's the heart and mind of Buddha. We kind of like being with each other. It's not even about you know, going to the Homeless Garden Project, which is a beautiful place out there on the cliffs what's our little sea world out there? Long's Marine Lab. You know, it's really like, so when we bring the soup, I say it's like eating a Mediterranean picnic. It's so beautiful. But so it's not even that. It's just, you know, we like cooking with each other in our little kitchen and trying to make our crooked spoons, you know, work for us, and our dented pots what did we call it, Chuck? Our vegetables on the edge. For a long time, we would get donations from the Wednesday Farmers Market, and many faith-based organizations are doing just what we're doing. And so at 7 o'clock, there is a group of faith-based organizations asking for leftover vegetables, and they make great soup, so we just liked doing that. I think we kept coming back. It's like positive reinforcement, but we kind of already knew that was the heart and mind of Buddha. That was a complete, unsurpassed awakening. And it's nice that Dogen thinks so too. To do the conditions for this awakened mind is to do good at the behest of others, to honor Buddha while being disturbed by demons, is also awakening the mind of enlightenment. How do we, when we're in the midst of differences of opinion, when we have now separated the world into, I think I'm on the right track here, versus there's a demon over there who doesn't agree with me. In the midst of that, how can we just kind of stop and say, I have to remember my awakened mind here and start manifesting the harmony, the accord, the mind of accord and compassion. So Dogen says when we can do that, when we've realized that we've divided the world into us and demons, When we can then stop and awaken our mind of connectedness and harmony, he says, that's Buddha's mind. That's unsurpassed perfect enlightenment. That was a few paragraphs in at the beginning. At the beginning, he goes into a little more detail on what Buddha's mind is. The first paragraph is very short. It just says, the snowy peaks, the Himalayas, are nirvana, I kind of wonder what, and this was a quote from Buddha, I kind of wonder what people in Buddha's time thought of the Himalayan mountains. They must have been impenetrable, you know, these huge, you know, most of the year you probably couldn't even see the top of them, you know, so they knew they were extremely tall, and when they could see the top, it was always snowy, and the clouds were blowing by. So why would the Buddha say that, you know, these tall impenetrable mountains is nirvana, is awakened mind? And I'm just imagining that the Buddha saw them, and with his Buddha eye, saw them just the way they are, standing there, millennium after millennium, millennia after millennia, what's the way? Just being snowy peaks, just fully being their tall mountainous selves, putting up with all wind and weather, not saying, you know, I like it when it's sunny. I don't like it so much when it's snowy. I don't like it so much when the wind is whipping by. I don't like being darkened by the clouds. But I think Buddha saw them as just being the way they are and not rejecting anything in their environment. And then actually, in the next paragraph, Dogen quotes Bodhidharma, our first ancestor in China, who went from India to China and sat for 9 years in a cave facing the wall before he started teaching our form of Buddhism, our form of just sitting. So Bodhidharma said, the mind is like wood and stone. And he goes on to say that this wood and stone mind is just the mind that accepts things as they are. It doesn't embellish with I like this, I don't like this. That doesn't try to get too philosophical and say, you know, is wood and stone, does it exist or does it not exist? Is it form or is it emptiness? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it tan? Is it brown? The mind is just wood and stone. It accepts things the way they are. You know, we remodeled the house next door in, what, the late 90s? And, you know, this house is at the same era. We remodeled in 2005, earlier. But I remember when we did the house next door, in the walls, next to the rafters, were we found newspapers that were from the 1800s. So, in both places, you know, when we got all the, when they were stripped down to the studs, it was the original redwood studs, the original redwood 2x4s that, you know, were really 2 inches by 4 inches. And they were perfect. You know, they were just wood. And they were just holding up the walls for, you know, a century and a half. We had to put a cement foundation under the zendo here when we remodeled. It was kind of sinking and leaning. It was you know, built right on the dirt. So we had to put cement underneath. Before we put the floor on top, we wrote the Heart Sutra in chalk all over the floor. And I think we've got other chants in around. I mean, there was quite a group of us that were just putting sutras underneath the floor as our foundation. But then we put the floor on top of it. So in these 150 years since the wood and stone of this building it's just done its job. We haven't thought so much. Even though I've seen these rafters, they're still back. They're still there. We didn't replace them. So there's still the 150-year-old redwood rafters in there. You know, now that we've got the zendo up, I haven't really thought about them much. So this wooden stone, the stone mind, isn't one that embellishes much. It just appreciates. I think I probably appreciate the zendo, but wood and stone mind just does what it does. It accepts the environment. It doesn't push anything away. That's wood and stone mind. Dogen goes on to say that this is. The Buddha's mind is thusness, suchness, that just accepts things as it is, such as it is. And that's the mind that accepts the environment and doesn't reject. And so this is our practice of cultivating Buddha mind, cultivating the Supreme Mind. So what, you know, in that later paragraph, what are the conditions for this mind? What are the causes and conditions? What has to come up in our life for us to remember our Buddha mind, our awakened mind? And, you know, thusness, things as it is around us all the time, is, you know, things as it is. It's like, I mean think of the Himalayas being in the and the weather around it, you know, it's just there all the time. And the Himalayas are not separate from that. I mean, the Himalayas are all part of that environment. It's just the way it is. So the conditions for awakened mind are with us, and we are it at all times. But another condition of us being humans, of just the way we are, is we have a tendency to separate ourselves out. We have a tendency to separate the world into many different pieces, and I think we kind of make ourselves the most important piece. We have this ego that isn't so bad. You know, the ego keeps us going. It helps us keep going. It helps us turn this blade of grass into a Buddha. So that the ego isn't a bad thing, but it plays a part in when we separate the world into many different pieces, and when we separate ourselves out into something special. So we have to be really aware. This mind of complete perfect enlightenment really has to be aware that we have this tendency, and we have this ego that sometimes separates the world into many different pieces. And you know, sometimes we use the ego as kind of a weapon to protect ourselves. I mean, we really feel strongly about keeping ourselves safe. And if we want to remember our experience of thusness, of complete perfect enlightenment, our practice is to put down our weapons. When we've divided the world into demons, and then this kind of tender, vulnerable self, we have to actually fearlessly put down our weapons and say, I'm not going to reject this. I'm going to try to meet this as openly as possible. And that's how Buddha takes the next step. And you can see that that's a real kind of different mind than living in a world of demons and protecting this self at all costs. You know, what would the next step be in that frame of mind versus the frame of mind that says, oh, yes, I've just separated the world into demons, and I really want to take the next step with the mind of Buddha. I don't want to reject those demons, and that's what we also have the capacity to. That's our Buddha nature. We're always there. We're always intimate with that mind. And that too is the mind that recognizes and stays mindful of our predisposition to separate out. So Dogen is reminding us to put down our weapons. Remember thusness, remember complete perfect enlightenment. I've brought another translation of this from Nishijima and Cross, and these two are go into a lot more detail about the title of, you know, of these two fascicles. And, you know, Hotsu Mujo Shin, awakening Hotsu Mujo Supreme Shin Mind. And then the other one is Hotsu Bodai Shin, awakening Buddha mind, or the mind of awakening. But they say that Shin can also be will. So that these might be called the will to awaken or pursue supreme truth, is another way. The will. Or what moves us towards the truth. That's a little bit dual. I mean, as Dogen says, you know, the truth of thusness is around us all the time. But so what moves us to awakening? What are those mindfulness bells that now that we're practicing in this posture with straight backs, following our breath, dropping our thoughts and coming back to our breath, or now that we're practicing with mindfulness, now that we're mindfully bowing to the doorknobs, now that we're mindfully picking up our coffee cups, now that we've got this practice, what are our mindfulness bells that help us remember this awakened mind? So I remember when I first came here in 93, and I think and we should have time for a little discussion, and people can talk about their own state of mind that brought us to, you know, 115 School Street here. What got us in the front door the first time? But you know, I was aware of suffering, and I was really, you know, grappling with, you know, looking the wooden Han out there says, be aware of the great matter. I was really looking at life and death, and not my own, but I was just really moved by life and death issues. I was suffering with them. I had also, you know, just come here and started a new job. So I really felt like I was suffering, and I'd had Suzuki Roshi's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind for years, and it was pretty good, and I just moved up the street, and lo and behold, I found the Zen Center, and said, you know, maybe I'll see what it's about. I really want to have some understanding about life and death. I really want to understand about suffering. And, you know, that's not so bad. Coming here to the Zendo, you know, I think, you know, maybe we all heard that it's a nice place. Maybe we heard that, you know, if we cultivate a still mind, meditation can be really relaxing. It's not a bad idea. That's not a bad thing. But and you know, I stuck with it. And you know, I've seen a lot of people here. There's people here. There's people sitting in this room that were here before me. And there's people that have been here for more than a couple of decades. So it's not a bad thing to come here because you're suffering and you've heard that that it's a little, you can have some peace of mind here. So that's not such a bad thing. But you know, I think originally I was just looking for more bullets for my weapon to protect myself. You know, I wanted a little more ammunition to, you know, fight off the suffering. And so it wasn't quite surrendering my weapons that that kept me here. I think I really did have to, you know, I think I really had to come to a Sangha day and like being with people here. I think I really did have to, you know, sit here a little and, you know, come here after work and kind of feel the tension drop from my shoulders. I think all of that had to keep pulling me back here before I got fearless enough to every once in a while surrender. Give up my bullets and remember my Bodhi mind and express this mind of and heart of Buddha, where I stopped picking and choosing just for a minute, just for a breath, just for you know, one moment in the garden, just for one moment in the kitchen. I think it took a while with this practice to surrender and give up my weapons and realize that I wasn't apart from Buddha, that I wasn't apart from anybody here, that I wasn't apart from the demons that I had identified in my life. The causes and conditions of this awakened mind, the truth of Buddhism, is with us always. Suchness, the universe, things as they are with us all the time. And another condition is remembering. As Dogen says, we remember with Buddha's mind. We remember with enlightened mind. Oh, I've just divided the world up into demons again. We've got a couple minutes left. Maybe people can remember, you know, why they came here the first time, what got them in the first, in the front door the first time. Maybe people can remember, putting down their weapons for the first time, surrendering the bullets. Any thoughts? Lori.
For me, it was a sense of just needing to settle. I had been gypsy Buddha, traveling all over Tibetan Buddhism, Spirit Rock, Vipassana, Madonna, San Francisco Zen Center, Tathamara. And I've lived in San Francisco for several years, but I had not come here. And I don't know why I hadn't come here. But at a certain point, which is like time to settle. Take a place, metaphorically, sit down, and literally, take a place, and literally, sit down. So it's just, I don't know why. It was just, I need to settle.
Yeah. So, you had forgotten that you were already K2 Himalaya, and you remembered that you were already this great snowy peak, just being who you are, And putting down your picking and choosing mind, and just, you know, now I remember I'm the Himalayas. I'll take whatever weather is around me, but I'm just going to be myself fully.
It seemed like a good place to do that. And then when I saw on the donation box, just yourself, that's enough. That's it.
Thank you.
Say that in an antagonistic way. You know, let's say it turns out, well, we're just not going to do that, Richard. If you want to come here, you know, I'll come. I'll find it. I mean, you know, but that what occurs to me a lot, and I think it becomes a difficult, almost confusing way of talking about Zen mind when we talk so much about the mind. The idea, to me, is to move awareness out and away from the mind and let it become a functional aid to life, but not this ego-driven. Mm-hmm. You know, the book I think of, and that, you know, Eugene's not here, but things, some of the books have read it, is Hara. Have you read that one?
Nope.
Well, when I'm done with it, I'm just going to bring it and put it in the library. But the point is, its point is the practice, you know, is done with the mind. It has to be. That's where we start. Mm-hmm. Attention, concentration, you know, letting go. But all that in Hara, it's a Zen concept. You know, of centering your life in your Dantian, in your Tanden, in Hara. You know, the whole practice is moving your awareness out of your head with no mind, mm-hmm. and into the center of your being, which is your heart. You know? And the thing is that, like in the types of things you were talking about, working, sense of not thinking and just having attention, you know, or doing qigong or tai chi or picking, you know, or mowing the lawn. But those things, you tend not to be having a story going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to me, that's why it's important not to just sit, but to have active, to make everything you do become non-thinking awareness.
Yeah.
That the essence of that, the reason why I felt like speaking of this is I think we don't really, I think when the saying, if you see the Buddha, kill him, you start to wonder, well, why do we even, why, you know, how about Lao Tzu or Bertrand Russell or who knows who. You know, Mandela, those guys probably had something into
them. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we call it Buddha mind just because Buddha and his teachings inspired this teaching. So I think we're saying it more out of respect to Buddha, who encouraged us to remember our unity with everything, our harmony with everyone.
Yeah, and so, Taoism was saying the same thing.
Well, I think so, and I don't know so much about Taoism, but I want to take your word for it. And but I think Buddha inspired this whole chain of thinkers to develop this idea. So I think that's why we call it Bodhi mind, and we can make it a little non-personal too. I mean, Buddha is called Buddha because it means awake, and Bodhi mind can be Buddha's mind, or it can just be awakened mind or the truth. So it doesn't have to be so personal. But you're right. This mind that does, drive you to Tassajara, the mind that keeps you coming here, is not that mind that's protecting yourself and arguing with yourself, but the mind that you've really let go of some of the personal adornments and are just thinking more about the accord and the harmony that you've experienced in your practice. So, thank you. Thank you very much.